Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hey fans, so let's be honest with each other. Most of the time when you're listening to a podcast and then there's like these intros or there's these ads, you just like skip ahead, right? You're like, skip, skip, skip. Let's get to the actual conversation. That's what I want to hear. And I get that because I do it myself. So just being honest. At the same time, I do want you to know that the very few companies, brands, and products that I am advertising on this podcast, and it is a few, are because they're ones that I utilize myself, that I believe in, that I think contribute to the greater good of female athletes and female athlete fueling. But I just want to do it differently. So what I'm going to try and do in these next few episodes, hopefully you'll pick up on it, is just present to you a company or brand that like makes sense based on the topic that we're talking about. And that way I'm not just like reading an ad script, which by the way, in all of our past episodes, all of the ad scripts are still my voice. I wrote it and I spoke it, of course, but I wrote it because I didn't just like read something that somebody sent me. I came up with that message that I wanted to share with you all about the product. But regardless, I just wanted to be a little more authentic and like relevant to the episode, right? So we're going to get to our conversation with Alexa Ephraimson, who is actually going back to school after professional running for many, many years. And she's going back to school and she's about to study nutrition and dietetics. She wants to become a dietitian, and it's part of her story and journey to help other people in navigating some of the struggles that she faced with fueling as a high-level athlete. And so with that being said, knowing that she's starting her journey in studying dietetics and becoming a dietitian, I want to share with you about how when I started my own business, I started using Practice Better. So Practice Better is my client portal and platform, and it can be for dietitians, it can be for other health coaches, nutritionists, just professionals who want to run a program. It can be a virtual program, which is what I do, or it can be in person as well. It's literally everything from your electronic medical charting, your calendar, your sending forms to clients, like an intake form, or sending notes if you want to send them notes and documents and meal plans, if you need to do invoicing and billing. Practice Better does everything. And that's literally the name of the company, Practice Better. It's a way for you to manage your practice better. Obviously, we all know, like, gone are the days of, you know, doing like paper and pen charting and keeping a locked file cabinet in your office. So much is done virtually. But one of the problems as you get into business, including if you are a dietitian or nutritionist, getting into your own private practice, is that it's actually quite confusing with all the different types of platforms you might need. You might need a platform for a calendar, a platform for invoicing, a platform for HIPAA secure client sessions, but that's just it. Practice Better does it all. It literally does it all. I can run my entire business on Practice Better. And I have been since Rise Up Nutrition's inception in 2018. I started as a sole proprietor and built myself up to an LLC S Corp, and I've done it all with the help of Practice Better. So I really can't speak highly enough about this platform. And if you are a health professional of any sort looking for a way to manage your business better, or maybe you're like Alexa, who's soon to be registered dietitian and interested in starting her own business someday, Practice Better is a great place to start. The sooner you start using it, the better, so that you can get used to it. Like I said, when I started my business five, six years ago, I actually had zero clients, but I started using Practice Better so that everything was set up so that when that client walked in my door or sent me that email ready to start, it was a seamless transition for how I was going to operate. So in the show notes, you're going to follow the link. It's kind of a weird link, but it's the specialty link to get my discount. So look to the show notes, follow the link, and then you're going to use the code RISEUP20. You're going to get 20% off of your first 4 months of using Practice Better. It is a monthly subscription rate. You're going to get 20% off for 4 months. And on top of that, they always give you a 14-day free trial anyway, so you're getting 2 free weeks along with that to kind of test it out. So please follow the link in the show notes. Practice Better, use the code RISEUP20, and I can personally vouch for it being a great place for people to start with your nutrition, health, or coaching business. All right, let's hear more from Alexa, our professional runner, soon to be dietitian. Hello, fans and listeners. Welcome back to the Female Athlete Nutrition Podcast. I'm here today with Alexa Ephraimson. I'm going to read off her bio quickly and get to the conversation because her and I have been chatting for like 20 minutes already and really enjoying our conversation with each other. And so I was like, oh my gosh, we need to hit record so that other people can listen. So Alexa, she signed a professional running contract with Nike when she was just 17 years old, and she ran professionally for 8 years. Her events were the 800 and 1500 meters. Alexa retired just last year, and in trying to figure out what her next chapter of life would entail, she landed on sports nutrition and becoming a registered dietitian. She's currently in grad school pursuing a master's of science in nutrition and nutrigenomics. Not only did she want to give back to the sport that gave her so much, but she also did struggle with body image and confidence and intuitive eating all throughout her professional career. So she wants to help athletes foster healthy relationships with eating and their bodies. And she believes that it's a lifelong relationship to cherish. I believe that as well, Alexa. So thanks so much for being willing to have this conversation with our audience.
Thank you for having me. So excited.
Yeah, me too. So we won't have to repeat everything we just talked about, but we definitely enjoyed, you know, already kind of conversing about your degree in nutrition and things like that, what's going on in your life. But for anybody maybe not familiar with you or your role as a professional athlete, I just kind of wanted to start our conversation there. Because I think what's so, you know, unique about your story is how young you signed that professional contract, you know, just at the age of 17 while you were still in high school. And, you know, a few others out there have done similar things, but certainly I think that throws you into such a different environment at such a young age that can be really challenging to handle. So I would just love to hear from you. Obviously, you were breaking records as a high school athlete and, you know, top in your state, top in the nation. What were some of those conversations like between you and your coaches or you and your family about whether to decide to go pro or potentially, you know, go the collegiate route? You know, what were some of those like pros and cons in those conversations like?
Yeah, I would start with, so going back to high school, I had a few really great opportunities to run fast. So I will say, like, because I got the opportunities to run in Diamond Leagues and to run in Melrose when I was a junior, sophomore in high school, those really helped open up the doors for those conversations to happen, whether I should take the professional route or take the collegiate route. And this was before NIL deals were in conversation. And so when I, in 2014, when I had signed, it was either you sign professionally and give up your collegiate eligibility because only amateurs at that point could be signed professionally or have a shoot contract of some kind or go the collegiate route. And so what it really came down to was, well, I don't know like how my collegiate career is going to go. So I might as well strike while the iron's hot. I have a lot of good deals that are being offered to me. I can stay near my family and I'm very close with my family. And I mean, I just don't know like some people go into college and they flourish and some people just don't. And so just because the opportunity was there, I wanted to take it. My coach wanted to take it. Yeah. I was able to stay with my high school coach at the time. So I signed when I was 17. It was the summer before my senior year of high school. And I fortunately was able to run for as long as I did. And I don't know if that's necessarily, like, I don't regret what I did. Was it the best for my career long-term? I don't know. And there is things that definitely could have changed the trajectory of my career, but I don't regret what I did because I had so many great opportunities to travel the world. I grew a lot as a person. And so that's just a little bit about my decision going into it. Strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah, it makes sense. Definitely. It's like, this is an opportunity in front of me, you know, and maybe it'll be here 4 years from now, or maybe it won't. We don't know. So it was something you were interested in. And so, sorry, did you grow up in Oregon? Oregon? Sorry, I always say that state wrong. Mm-hmm. That was embarrassing.
<It's okay. laughs> Yeah, so I grew up in Southwest Washington. It's about 15 minutes outside of Portland. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no one really knows where Camas, Washington is. So it's in the Portland area, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so that also, I think, made it, I don't know, at 17, that I'm not going to say made it easier by any means, but it felt more local because you were staying in that area for the time for training and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the first 6 years of my career, I wasn't really part of a team. I was primarily just with my high school coach. Mm. And so I needed that support system somehow. And having my family there served as that instead of going to a professional running team. And I still went to college, so I still had like that support system, but I didn't have teammates. And so I don't want to say needed to be home, but I sort of
needed support
in a way. To,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody needs support on some level. So for you, your family being close to home was that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, these are kind of like snowball questions, but just to have a little fun with it. Like, what was the most exciting or most fun part about being a pro athlete at such a young age?
I mean, I was naive. I didn't know what I didn't know. So I really, in those first few parts of my career, I really didn't have any limitations on myself. I didn't get in my own way. Whereas I feel like as you get older, you get more aware of yourself. And so I just felt like I ran free and I loved it and I was passionate and I loved traveling. And so I had a lot of great opportunities to travel to some really cool places. And so it was really fun. And I think that because I was also pursuing my undergraduate while I was running, I didn't feel like I was really missing out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there's some professional athletes who signed out of high school and they didn't go to college. And so, like, I don't want to say I got the college experience because it's not like I went and partied or anything, but I was able to sort of do both while also running professionally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And now maybe this is, again, a big question that we'll need to break apart and dive into more deeply, but what were some of the major challenges of, you know, competing at an elite level starting at such a young age?
I mean, starting at such a young age, I think that because I was so good in high school, and I don't want to say like I was dominating, but I was.
Yeah, you can say that. You just say it. It's what it is. You were dominating.
I mean, I had no competition to then like be thrown into a field where I had the slowest PR.
Yeah.
That was a big, big mental shift for me because of just that comparison factor. Mm-hmm. I've never had to really deal with that before. And I was with my high school coach for the first 6 years of my career. And then I had switched over to a team. And that was probably the hardest part in switching over to that team. It's because I never had to compare myself to anybody in practice. And the perfectionist and type A personality in me was like, I need to be hitting every split that my teammates are hitting, or else like I'm not doing my best. And so that became a really big mental battle, really those last 2 years of my career that I had to deal with because like everyone's training is different. Yeah. And so I don't have to be doing one person's training to be doing my best, right. But that was, and I know that sounds like it should be something easy to grapple with because that's just the transition that you have when you go from high school to college, but I never had that transition. Yeah. And so it was just delayed. And so that was a really big challenge for me mentally. And it just like shot my confidence. And so yeah. really having to build my confidence back up because then it just bled into like all parts of my training and running. And so those last 2 years of my career really weren't, I didn't perform very well, but that's probably where I made the most growth as a person.
Yeah. You know, I think so many people can resonate with this. Even I do. I think back to my high school and then collegiate career, and one of the and I was nowhere near the level that you were, but that it did shape. I was, you know, known as a great. I'm in the Agawam High School Athletics Hall of Fame. For, you know, blah blah blah, yeah. And like I was a known, well, good athlete, and then I go to college and I'm in the middle to lower end of the pack, and mm-hmm. it does rock your confidence. And I think. I would rather us talk about this and say that it's okay and still be like, but it's still fun and like you're still good, you know, and maybe this is like a really, really cheesy. This is so cheesy, but my dad says it all the time. He reminds us that 50% of your medical doctors and lawyers graduated in the bottom half of their class, right? Like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Well, right. I mean, because it's 50%. So it's like we have to just embrace that we're still good enough to be on the team and we made it to that level. And mm-hmm. instead of like knocking ourselves down that, oh, we're in the bottom half, it's like, yeah, somebody's always going to be in the bottom half. If this is a race of two people, someone's going to be in the bottom half. Like, and, but still be, you know, proud to be in the race, to be in the competition. And, you know, but these, it's a huge struggle. I definitely struggled a lot with it. A lot of my clients do. You struggled with it, even though you were already a professional athlete, you know, that shift. It's, you know, and that's, it's funny too, because even when you said like, you were a little shy to say that you dominated, and I was like, no, say it, because we should be really proud of ourselves where we can look back. Like I look back on my high school career and I'm like, I should be really proud of myself for that. And even my collegiate career, maybe I wasn't dominating, but like I still did it.
Yeah. And I think it's the, running is obviously very easy to compare numbers and compare times. But the biggest thing is just comparing yourself to your prior versions of yourself, mm-hmm. because that's how you're going to measure your growth and your success. And I know I think it also depends on what part of running that you value and what part of athletics that you value. And you can value winning. I mean, yeah. That's definitely a part that you can value. But like, at the same time, how else are you going to show your success by just like, oh, I'm getting better. And you do that by not comparing yourself to others, but comparing yourself to who you were 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago.
And what I love as well is we can talk about this from the sport aspect, like you said, of like you can compare your personal times. Are you improving? But you also just mentioned the last 2 years of your career, maybe you weren't improving athletically as much, but you saw the most personal growth at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something else to reflect upon and say, okay, maybe I didn't grow or progress athletically, but I grew and progressed in these other ways. And that's something else to value and to reflect upon.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the reasons why I valued running so much was because of the personal growth aspect of it, because there's so many different avenues that you can grow and you can better yourself. And what I realized when I did decide to retire was that the fact that I'm able to even come to this decision and say, I'm ready for this next step, the 2 or 3 years prior, I wouldn't even have had the confidence to like say, I'm ready for this next step. I would have been too scared because I wouldn't have known what my next step is. But I was able to say, I'm ready to retire, even though I don't know what I'm going to be doing next. Yeah. I am confident in myself. I respect myself enough that if I feel this way, then I need to honor that. And it's time to retire. And I know we haven't really talked about like my retirement decisions, but I just thought it was very full circle of me to actually be able to come to that decision and be happy and content with it.
So, yeah.
Because it's, some people are forced into that decision. Some people might not have the autonomy to make that decision for themselves. And so I thought that it was very full circle in my personal growth that I was able to make that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said too, so many people are afraid to leave something without having the next thing lined up. But sometimes you just, you know, you just take that leap of faith and trust in yourself that you'll figure it out somehow. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that has to happen first. Sometimes you have to take the leap of faith in order for the next thing to develop.
Yeah. And especially for athletes, I mean, this can be for professional athletes that are ready to retire. This can be for collegiate athletes that are about to graduate. Like, it's an identity of yourself. And it's such a huge part of your life that, of course, it's scary. It's going to be scary whether you are ready to retire or you are ready to graduate or you're not. And so just sort of grappling with that change in identity as well. That doesn't mean you can't be an athlete. You can still run. You can still do everything, not everything, but you can still do all the exercises, all the races. You can still do all that, do all those things, even if you're not labeled as a collegiate athlete or a professional athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. And I think you're going to show that in your own life in these next coming years. And do you want to touch a little bit on that decision to retire? Because I know it wasn't something that you fully had planned out, as we kind of just discussed. You didn't know what the next step was, but you kind of came to that decision. Do you want to expand on it a little bit as to kind of why?
I'd love to. Yeah. Like I said, I had joined Pete Julian's group. We didn't really have a team name at the time, but he was a Nike team. We later became established as Union Athletic Club. And the last 2 years of my running career, I was running like some of the worst times that I had ran over the course of my entire career. And so obviously, when you're not performing well, those thoughts of being done start to creep in.
It just gets harder and it's not fun anymore. Yeah.
And so I had started to have those thoughts a little bit in 2021, but I was like, I'm just going to see it out for another year. I still have a little bit of passion for it. And I feel like over the indoor season of 2022, I did get a pretty good momentum and I was like, okay, I can see myself like doing well again, like on the track for my standards. But for the outdoor season, I had a lot of personal challenges going on. At the time, my partner's father had a brain aneurysm and he was in a coma for a couple weeks. And so my partner was back home in Australia and that was really hard. And I think that when things like that happen, it sort of puts your life into perspective and like your stresses into perspective.
Yeah.
And so I was mentally struggling with that side of it. But even before that had happened, I was just feeling like I didn't even want to race. I felt so obligated to. I just had lost the passion. My heart wasn't in it. And there, so with all of those coming into play, as well as there's just other aspects of my life that I was more excited about. Mm-hmm. I mean, outside of racing, outside of running, there was just other things that I was looking forward to. And running is so demanding that sort of needs to be at the forefront of your mind. And so for me to, one, want to do other things, not want to race. Like in my last race, I thought to myself halfway through, I don't even want to be here.
Yeah.
And that's when I was said, you know what? I think I need to reevaluate how I'm feeling about this and actually address it. Cause I think I had been pushing it off a little for a couple months, but at that point I was like, I need to do something about this now because it's not going to help if I just keep going to practice and keep trying to.
No, resentment for the sport, for the team will just keep building up and you're just going to start to, hate will build up and it's just not fun. Yeah.
No, it's not fun. And I feel like I still have a very healthy relationship with running, with my coach, with my team, and I'm happy for that. So that means I did end up probably the point when I needed to retire. But yeah, so after that last race, I was in Nashville. I was by myself. And so I flew home and I stayed at my parents' house. And the next morning, my dad could really tell that I was sort of internally conflicted. And so he's just such a good soundboard. And we just had like a couple hour long conversation. He was just, and I hope that people do have that person, whether it's a parent, whether it's a friend, whether it's a sibling, but he just asked me a few questions and I just sort of came to the realization, like, I think I need to take a step back, whether it is retire or whether it is just take a couple month break, but I need to do something about it. So that's, and then I decided that I was happy to be done with it. So that's sort of.
Sometimes once you make a decision, the whatever feeling you get after that decision kind of tells you it's the right one. So if you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna put a pause on things. And then if you feel like such a huge sense of relief, then it's like, okay, maybe that's exactly it, you know? And
yeah.
I think sometimes too, people I've experienced a lot in my own life and then clients I work with, there's a lot more stress and anxiety in the decision-making process. And when you make a decision, even if in the end it turns out to be the wrong decision, it's like making a decision in and of itself helps you move forward. And then if like a week later, a month later, you're like, oh, that was the wrong decision. That's okay. Make another one, you know, but
yeah, exactly.
it's prolonging the decision that needs to be made and being in that period of just not knowing and anxiety and stress over a situation that's really hard on people.
Yeah. And I think that it's also important to acknowledge those emotions that all come out with that decision making too. Cause like, I swear for like the month of May and June in 2022, I cried like every single day.
Yeah.
And so it's just, but like, that's okay. And the emotions that get drawn out with these big decisions that do invoke stress and anxiety, that's okay. And it's just making sure that you listen to your gut, listen to your intuition. And so, yeah, it was a big decision, but I'm still happy with it a year and a half later.
That's great. That's, yeah. So thank you for sharing that and just kind of reasonings why and stuff. And then I think kind of also post-retirement, as mentioned when I read your bio, you're now studying nutrition, but then you also started to be a little more vocal, like on social media and stuff, about maybe some of the personal struggles that did exist in pro running, just the running culture in general, and eating, comparison, body dysmorphia, things like that as well. Is this something that as you were going through it, you kind of recognized that those were issues, or more things kind of in hindsight that looking back, or a little mix of both?
A little mix of both, but unfortunately, mostly hindsight.
Yeah.
I think that athletics just in general, and females in particular, but males do deal with this as well, but running specifically, or like gymnastics or swimming, there's just certain sports that our bodies are somehow sometimes tied to our performance, and you get that one number on the scale stuck in your head, and if you're not running well, it's because of that. That was, I feel like, the epitome of my career in terms of my relationship with food and my weight. I mean, I feel like I was constantly thinking about my weight and would weigh myself every day, probably for years. And then that would dictate my eating for the day. But I never realized like, this actually isn't healthy until looking back on it and being like, oh, wow, this is not good for my confidence, is not good physiologically, and also signing my professional contract so early and trying to have a very lean body as an endurance professional runner at age 17, when my body is just trying to like go through its normal hormonal healthy changes. I think that's where I just didn't make that link that like, this is okay if I have like weight fluctuations, if I have water retention, if I have like slight weight gain, it didn't seem okay in my mind. It became a matter of willpower or discipline, when really that's just like your body physiologically trying to survive and do the adaptation that it's supposed to do for long-term health.
And I think that so many young, so obviously like a lot of female athletes are competitive in their high school and college years. I'm not saying we can't be as we're older. That's, you know, me over here. I'm trying to be competitive still. But like, we have those opportunities in high school and college. And the thing is, if we're just using our eyesight and making body comparisons and stuff, this, you know, high school girl is going to be comparing herself to a pro athlete. And age, first of all, years in training makes a difference. But also age makes a difference to say that truly, somebody in their teen years and early 20s is truly, truly, truly needs more body fat on them, higher body fat percentage than a woman in their late 20s or early 30s. Mm-hmm. And that's hormonally what we're going through. and what is appropriate and right. And there's just so many girls that I think, you know, look to their idols, and this is no fault to the idol who, you know, is older, right? And it's like, yeah, that's their body. That's, you know, we shouldn't be concerned about other people's bodies. But yeah, as your example here being, you know, 17, 18, 19, there is no one look to anybody, but it actually is appropriate for somebody of that age to have a higher body fat percentage than somebody who's 27, 28, 29. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's helpful to your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you were competing against people older and maybe not recognizing that. Well, and how could you recognize that unless you had a professional really, you know, guiding you and telling you in that way?
Yeah. And like the education that I got around nutrition and body weight was not qualified. That's another hindsight that I've seen now, that it was that classic like restriction binge cycle, losing intuitive eating, all of that. That's just not healthy.
Okay, Alexa, it surprises me, I think, like knowing that you were competing as a professional runner around the same time that like Mary Kane's story broke out about, you know, her struggles with being like pressured regarding eating and her body weight and stuff like that. I think what still amazes me is that even now here in 2023, there are so many professional athletes that really just have to figure it out on their own. And that kind of, it just surprises me, you know, that, and there are many pro athletes who are, oh, I'm working with a dietitian, I'm working with a nutritionist, but it's like, they had to figure that out on their own. Or maybe their team has like a contact, but it's not necessarily a nutrition contract per se, you know, like, you know, like even Nike, I don't know all their ins and outs, and I know you're no longer with them, but like to my current knowledge, it's not like the Nike running teams like have a go-to sports dietitian, you know, like some other athletes have one to go to. But am I right about that? That you really have to kind of figure it out on your own, or am I wrong?
So when I was with my high school coach, Nike really just let us use the resources that we wanted. I think it's good because you have the independence, you have the freedom to choose the physicians and dietitians and all those resources that you do have. You get to choose whether you want to work with them or not.
So,
and I think that in regards to nutrition, it's just the nutrition culture and nutrition education, it's getting better in the running world, that it needs to be addressed. But maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago, the need for it might not have been as high.
Yeah.
Nor was it recognized as much. And just nutrition in general, especially with someone like Mary or someone like myself when we were pro athletes as teenagers, it's also sort of a sensitive subject. And so to like just throw a nutritionist, and you want to make sure that you have a registered dietitian, not just a nutritionist, as part of that support staff, I think that it was just that need wasn't there, or didn't seem to need to be there.
Yeah.
And it fell on the coaches. But now we're realizing that weight and performance, while there is a correlation between it, it's not like it's the main factor of how well you're going to perform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're pursuing a career in nutrition too. And it's one of those things where I shared with you before we started recording that when I was going through school and I told my advisors I wanted to be a sports dietitian, they were like, no, that doesn't like exist. You know, like those jobs really didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It was like Nancy Clark and nobody else. And if you know who Nancy is, then you know who Nancy is. She was like, she's the OG sports dietitian. She's actually been on this podcast. I forget which episode. We'll include it in the show notes, but early on though. Anyways, so like the field has grown so much in the last 10, 15 years where it is a profession now. There are, you know, NFL teams with sports dietitians. There are sports dietitians working at the collegiate level, you know, with all across all different sports. There's still tons of D2 and D3 schools that do not have one. And then there's still these pockets of, you know, professional and elite athletes that, you know, you do have to, you know, maybe you are figuring it out or this person's recommended, but it's like, when we think about it, when I think about the career of a sports dietitian, I would think that every pro runner would have their sports dietitian, and they don't.
I know, you would think. And it's just, there's some parts of the running of your running career that sometimes take precedent? Like, do you choose to spend time with a dietitian or a sports psych? Do you choose to work with a massage therapist and an acupuncturist and have a nutritionist or a registered dietitian? And so it's like, also, I mean, I think that coaches should probably push for making sure that you work with a sports dietitian, even if you aren't on the spectrum of having some sort of eating disorder, but just for proper fueling and proper recovery.
Yeah, 100%. And like, that's what another part that I do in my job is just working with teams to just, hey, once a semester, like meet with an entire team to just get some education out there. You know, and then if an athlete wants to consult further, they can. Mm-hmm. But I just think that's huge of like knowing, hey, there's this resource. We're all just going to learn something together. And then whoever needs it more. Great. And yeah, I mean, that's what they do at like the U.S. Olympic Committee. You know, they've got everybody. It doesn't mean that every Olympic athlete has to work with a sports dietitian, like super hands on all the time. But like, oh, yeah, I met them once last year. They did an education, whatever. I see their pamphlets and then like, they know who to go to if needed. And I think, I think that definitely with the, maybe this way with other sports too, I'm not 100% sure, but I just feel like there's a lot of pro and elite athletes that still don't have that resource yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's on the athlete, but it's also on the coaches to make sure that the athletes have those resources if they do want them. Mm-hmm. I mean, some athletes might not want one for whatever reason. And so you don't want to force that because you want, I mean, nutrition is such an ingrained, like just eating in general is such an ingrained habit that it is hard to change. So if people do want to make nutrition changes, they need to want to make that change because it's beyond just habitual. I mean, it's financial, it's convenience, it's mm-hmm. all these other factors that go into it. And so the athletes have to want to make the change as well if they feel they need to make a change. But sometimes coaches might need to like recognize this person needs help.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot on a coach's plate already that like my advice to a coach would be to hand it off to a qualified professional. I think coaches take, you know, and I understand why a coach would try to help an athlete with their nutrition on some level because they're there day in and day out. And, you know, historically coaches have to do so much. But I think we're coming to an age where it is like, okay, for you to be the best coach possible, let somebody else do the job of the dietitian.
Exactly.
Going back to your experiences then, so you know, were not necessarily educated on, you know, just nutrition, body weight, size, and therefore made your own conclusions. As a young athlete, you were like, okay, I ran fast at this weight. Let me keep weighing myself and try and be this weight so I keep running fast. And I think so many people have had that exact same mentality, drawn those same conclusions, weighed themselves every single day. But it gets tricky when it then dictates how you eat that day. Because I think one of the very first things for anybody who might become a client of mine in the future, this is going to freak them out. But one of the very first things that we encourage you to do is stop weighing yourself. So no matter what your weight is, I don't care what your BMI is. I don't care what the number is. No matter what the weight is, we do have you stop weighing yourself because your relationship with nutrition and food, you need to start making behavioral changes regardless of your weight, you know? And, you know, you mentioned like kind of learning intuitive eating and stuff in your bio. And it's like, how are you ever going to do that if you have a number creeping into your mind and making decisions for you? So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think we can all give a nod to the fact that weight might play a role in performance on some level. There's lots of sports that are weight based, you know, like mixed martial arts is weight based, lightweight rowing, weight based, you know, like, so I understand mm-hmm. that like yeah. there's an association, but we definitely need to uncouple the idea that weight is completely tied to nutrition or that weight is completely tied to performance. They're mm-hmm. They're not as strong as we've been led to believe.
I know. And I think that because I wasn't educated around it, I thought it was the main factor that influenced my performance. And really, like, what about all the training and all the workouts that you do? Yeah. Like, does that not dictate the performance that you have? And I think that it's just one of those factors of athletics that's just tied in with body image and confidence, and it can just unfortunately turn into a downward spiral if you don't have like outside voices talking to you saying like, no, you, these need to not be as correlated or as strongly correlated as you make it out to believe. And it's just like, if you believe it, then that's what it's going to be. And you just need to have someone or yourself or read up on literature that says, no, you need to not associate these as strongly.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that you've made a decision to study nutrition, is that something that you kind of like, are you just totally open? Let's see where this takes me. There's so many things you can do with nutrition. You can do, you know, community nutrition. You can work at restaurants. You can be in a hospital, clinical dietitian, so many different things. Mm-hmm. But do you feel such a strong connection to like sports nutrition? Do you want to go that
way? I do. Yeah. In my bio that you had read off, I feel so strongly that I need to give back to the sport that gave me so much. I mean, running in itself is very selfish. Being a professional runner is incredibly self-serving. Yes, you can be inspirational to other people, but at the same time, you are constantly putting yourself first. And so I had promised this to myself probably halfway through my career. I was like, whatever I decide to do next, it needs to be selfless to some degree. It needs to be giving back. And so I want to use my experiences, my attitudes, my beliefs towards that mind-body-food connection to give back to the athletes or give back to the person that I was 6, 7, 8 years ago that needed a voice like me to say, you're okay. Your value isn't based off of your weight. Your performance is not based off of your weight. This is what's physiologically going on with your body. Like, I feel like I just spent years beating myself up thinking it was a willpower discipline issue when really it's just the hormonal changes and then the restriction and binging, like starvation, your body going into starvation mode and protection mode, like everything that's correlated with that. I want to help as many young athletes as I can. And I know that this is also for older athletes too. It's not just young athletes, but like teenagers and athletes in their early to mid 20s, like, not have such a mental battle with themselves over what they see in the mirror or the number they see on the scale. So I want to try and help just people be kinder to themselves because it can be a lonely, stressful, intense battle if it's not addressed.
Yeah. Well, get your degree and come on over to the Rise of Nutrition team. Okay.
I will.
Just, you know, hit me up again. Say I'm ready to help these girls because that is exactly what we're doing. And also, I think it's crazy how, in my experience working in this, I experienced it myself as a female athlete. Again, not at the level you were at, but I still experienced it. And then it's crazy as you get into working with girls and female athletes, just, I feel like it affects everybody on some level, you know, some people to that extreme of, hey, you're a pro athlete and you're weighing yourself every day. And like, either, you know, the other example of like, you know, Mary Kane, it took her out of her sport. And but then it's like, but also, you know, there's that collegiate basketball player who's just like really beating herself up on the fact that she doesn't like how her legs look and then like feels guilty after, you know, eating, you know, ice cream with her friends. And it's like, whoa, like there's so much work to be done to help girls focus on fueling their body for performance and having confidence in their own decisions. And there's just so much work. So yeah, get your degree and come on over. And we're going to change things for the better for the future of female athletes. Well, Alexa, thank you so much for having this conversation. I loved our, like, kind of the progression of just talking about your career decisions, the decision you made to stop, and kind of how that's led you into this next chapter of your life to give back so selflessly. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that the work that you're doing too is really helpful. And I think we need hopefully more people like us that just see the athletes as whole people.
Yeah.
We're not just Yeah, it's for, because the thing is, like, your relationship with your mind and your body and your food goes beyond athletics.
Goes beyond
like,
sport.
this is a relationship you're going to have your entire life. Mm-hmm. So you want it to be as healthy and fulfilling as it can be.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, Alexa, I do ask every guest the same questions at the end just to have a little fun. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
If there was one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never be sick of it, what would it be?
My grandpa makes these really good buttermilk biscuits. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's just something that you could have with so many different options. So the variety of it, I think, would have to be a factor if I ate it every single day. And they're so good. I make them. They're just not as good. But grandpa's buttermilk biscuits.
Yeah. Sometimes food is better when other people make it for you.
Yeah. You're like, this just doesn't hit as well as when grandpa makes it.
Yeah. I love that. Very curious to hear your answer now, where you are now in your life. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
Ooh, I am not a good tennis player. I don't play it very often, but tennis is for some reason really fun. It's probably because I'm not doing it like super competitively.
Yeah.
And yeah, so tennis, even though I haven't played it all that much.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. And keeping it fun, that seems to be something that's really driven you in your athletics anyways, is keeping it fun. So love it. Okay. How about as a spectator, what's your favorite sport to watch?
Probably also tennis.
Oh, wow. Cool.
But also my sister is in her senior year of playing soccer at Western Oregon University. And so that's been really fun because I feel like I haven't actually been able to enjoy watching her play because I'm usually at training camps or I'm away. And so that's been really nice to just watch soccer too, because I know it's like my sister, but it's been nice.
Yeah. And it's nice to support her at the, you know, as she kind of wraps up her collegiate career. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And final question. If there's a female athlete out there you want to give a shout out to for just being an inspiration or a role model, whether she's somebody well-known or just in your personal life, who would that be and why?
Mm-hmm. I'd have to be my mom.
Yeah.
She was my role model growing up as an athlete. She did triathlon. She did Ironman. She did marathon. She was just a complete badass. So that definitely helped build my drive and resilience and work ethic. And so I think that she helped mold me into the athlete that I was and today.
Yeah, amazing. So shout out to your mom, Mrs. Ephraimson. Love it. Well, again, Alexa, thank you so much for coming on. This was awesome. And I'm super excited to hear, you know, as you move forward in your career, how you do give back, because I'm confident that you will. I have no doubts about it. So I'm super excited for you to influence others positively. You know, you have for many years as a running inspiration, and now as in your career, I think you'll be future dietitian, RD2B, an inspiration there too.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Awesome. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out, and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.